Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a cybersecurity professional and advisor. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. Now, unless you've been borrowing network access from your neighbor, there's really a good chance you've got some kind of a Wi-Fi setup in your home. The consumer Wi-Fi market has exploded in recent years, and everything we do nowadays involves an internet connection. So gone are the days when there was a cable modem that you connected and provided that kind of intermittent access on demand. You had to dial it up. Now it's Wi-Fi routers who have become ubiquitous. They're an always-on appliance in almost every home. And on top of that, we often see other things like extenders and mesh networks, and even Wi-Fi solutions that are specifically for homes when there's a lot of gamers. So it can be really overwhelming for an average person, a mom or a dad, to manage that kind of network and think of ways of making it more secure for their family. Then came the pandemic, and it made things even more challenging and more important than ever to have both good access, stable access, and make sure it's decently secure when connecting to the company networks we typically only connected or mostly connected to from work. And there's more in play on that home Wi-Fi now. And don't even get me started on stuff like Amazon Sidewalk that borrows a bit of Wi-Fi from users' homes. So I'm not going to go there. Diana, what do you do for your home setup?
Yeah, well, as you know, Limor, I got my start in networking. And so I may have over-engineered the setup here in our house when we built it. But yeah, a little bit. I get
unexpectedly.
Yeah. But I really love our system because we have no dead zones. We have plenty of bandwidth. My partner, he's a gamer and he can stream whatever he needs to over it. So it's great, you know, but you can actually get everything that I over-engineered in a home solution. And so I think that's really great. It's just, as you were talking about the technology and how it's advanced, everybody now can have a really nice, fast Wi-Fi setup. But what about you? What's the Wi-Fi situation at your house, Limor?
Well, I'm not going to say it here on the podcast because I do have to keep my Wi-Fi setup both secure and obscure. So I can tell you that it involves strong passwords, a unique network ID, and proper encryption. And everyone can do that. So to help us walk through some current Wi-Fi options and help you create a more secure and reliable system for your home without breaking the bank, we are thrilled to have with us JJ Manella, founder and principal advisor, network security at Vision Security. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, ladies. Happy to be here.
So Jennifer, we mentioned cable modems, Wi-Fi routers, extenders, mesh. What are the main components that people really need for a home Wi-Fi network? And how do these fit together?
Limor, I have to tell you, when you're talking about cable modems, I want to sit in the background and just make little beepy noises and noises. But I mean, it's really pretty simple. At the base, you know, just kind of like the vanilla layer, really all we need is some type of an internet connection, whatever kind of handoff that is coming into a house, and then an access point. And, you know, typically whoever you've bought your internet connection from is going to give you a little box that does all of that for you. And you can configure the wireless, you know, directly on that typically. Or if you're in a larger house or you want a little bit more security or, flexibility and configuration, what you might do is, you know, buy kind of a kit of, you know, two or three APs that you could connect and spread around the house. So really just, you know, an internet connection, and you can either use the equipment they've given you or, you know, buy an add-on kit and get a little bit more of an extension from that.
So, JJ, I was wondering about that. You know, what would be the deciding factor on whether you use what your provider, your cable provider, provides for your internet provider? What's the decision point on whether or not you use that or you go out on your own? Would it be something like bandwidth? Do you get more security if you buy your own? What are the benefits to doing that?
I think there's all of it. I mean, part of it really depends on, definitely budget, because if you're using what they've given you, it's not going to be an additional cost. A lot of the kits that you get, if it's two or three APs that you're going to buy yourself, those typically run anywhere from, maybe 150 up to $500 or $600. Part of it just depends on what your budget is and how much you're willing to spend on quality, bandwidth or security. And then, anytime that you're going to get something that they've provided you for free that's just kind of baked in, it's really going to be the bare essentials of connectivity. You're not going to get a lot of options in terms of, added on security features, or a lot of control over how you're configuring the networks. And it's going to be legacy stuff pretty quickly. We're now in the cycle of wireless technology, both with the RF technology, so the actual airwaves that we're using, as well as the security protocols that we're using. Those things are iterating and advancing more quickly than they had before. So that's kind of changing pretty quickly. And if you do want to take advantage of higher bandwidth or better security, you're probably not going to get that from, the little box that your provider gave to you.
Well, that's interesting. It makes sense. We do see boxes for sales everywhere, so I'm guessing you can always upgrade if you want it. And then when setting up the security of a Wi-Fi network, what do these security options mean? There's like WEP, WPA, WPA 2 personal, then there's enterprise, there's all these things. Does it matter which one I choose on my home network?
This is so funny. So I work with a lot of organizations around, but both customers as well as, standards or certification organizations around these protocols. And I've worked in enterprise wireless since the late 90s. It's just so much. There's so many acronyms. There's so much to know, and there's so much that changes quickly, and some things that work together or don't work together. And so, with all of the scramble of the letters and the security. The WEP is WEP. That's kind of old and gone, and we don't use that. Just kind of the next generation of what WEP was doing. And it's just designed to kind of provide some level of identification or authentication, and then ideally encryption when you get onto the network. And so that just, gives you some privacy and protection over the data that's being transmitted. So kind of like the nutshell of right now, we're between WPA2 and WPA3. And so, kind of a good rule of thumb is, if there's numbers that look like, a version one, version two, version three, and when we're talking about security, typically the higher that number or version, the better off you are. But obviously all of the things have to support that. So whatever you're connecting, to the network has to be able to speak that language, so to speak. So if we're doing WPA2, or three, you're going to have an option for what they call a personal network. And that's where you're using a pre-shared key, or an enterprise version, which is the type of SSID that's going to do an authentication, typically a radius authentication. So yeah, so WPA2 is where probably most people's stuff is, if you can, get everything onto that. As WPA3 gets rolled out more broadly, if you're buying those kits and you're adding onto your own stuff and your endpoint supports it, your laptops, your whatever you're connecting, that's a great option. And there are transition modes. So you can turn on WPA3 in your home network and set it up so that it will also kind of do the WPA2 as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So I was wondering, can we talk a little bit about these network names, or I think they're SSIDs? Yeah, I've noticed that in cities and some of my neighbors, you'll see some really creative ones popping up under, when it says, do you want to connect to a Wi-Fi network? There are some really fun names that people use. Some of them can be a little bit silly. And what are those names for? And I've also heard that they you shouldn't, if you want to be really secure, you shouldn't even have that name on. What does that mean? Should I turn it off?
Okay, the SSID names is just a network name. So it really is completely inconsequential. You could name it, you know, blue or pink or your favorite band name or whatever. If you are using something from your internet provider, it's going to have some kind of funky, weird, standard, you know, letters and numbers thing. It really doesn't matter what you name it. Now, a lot of people are going to tell you, you know, don't name it something that's specific to your home address or your name or, you know, anything like that that would make it identifiable to you. The truth is, if somebody's close enough to pick that wireless signal up, they're going to be able to tell which house it's coming from. So it's, you know, I would avoid naming them, you know, my name, you know, like my last name or my house address or something, just because it's an easy thing to not do. But when it comes to hiding the SSID, when you're hiding the SSID, all you're doing is telling it not to broadcast the name. It doesn't stop anything else from happening. So it's still taking up airspace. It's still available to be seen by anybody that has any tools to see it with. And it's actually more of a security risk to turn the SSID off or the name off than it is to leave it on. Because if you are hiding the SSID, what happens is let's say you have your, you know, your laptop that you usually use. When you configure that network, let's say the network is called Blue. My laptop is always going to have to look for Blue, even if it's not broadcasting. And so what it does is it goes out into the world and it yells and it asks for the network name Blue. So if you're walking through the airport or you're in a Starbucks or wherever, and you're outside your home, everybody knows what your home network is because your laptop is screaming for it everywhere. So I'm not a huge fan of hiding or cloaking the SSID name. Like I said, it's usually more of a risk, especially in a home network, than it is a benefit. There are some specific use cases in enterprise where we might do that. The other thing is a lot of the little funky things you use in a home, like home automation, even some little handheld reader devices, won't connect to an SSID if it's not being broadcast. So, you know, Jen's opinion here, don't hide the SSID name. You're definitely not getting any security from it, and it may put you at more risk.
That makes a lot of sense. So if we've chosen one of the options that requires a password to get on the network, what would be good tips for a good password? Would it be better to have an easy password that, you know, everybody can connect? These people come to your house and they're like, hey, what's the Wi-Fi password? Now you're going to tell them, oh, it's this 22 character thing. So, you know, how do we make it simple enough for people to, you know, come into it if there are guests and make it secure enough?
Yeah, there's, you know, a few different things here. And, you know, like every good technologist is, I'm going to say it depends. So it depends on your use case as to whether or not, you know, the passphrases are being used by people visiting your house, or if there's maybe a different way to set up a different type of network, or even if it's pre-shared key, just set up a guest pre-shared key network. So that aside, just like your normal daily operation here, it does depend on the security protocol that you're using. So for example, if you're using WPA2, you do need a longer password, and it can be a passphrase. It doesn't have to be a weird jumble of, you know, letters and numbers and symbols and uppercase and lowercase. It can just be some phrase. You know, I think 16 characters is a good place to start. That's, you know, that's just kind of a random number that's subjective. But WPA2 is susceptible to offline dictionary attacks. So if you're using a pre-shared key, what that means is that somebody could, you know, come by, drive by, whatever, collect some of the data, even though they can't read it, take it back somewhere else and break that passcode. If you're using WPA3, that's not the case. So you can use a shorter passphrase and you'll still get the same encryption benefit because the encryption key in this case is not tied to the length of the passphrase. And it's not susceptible to a dictionary attack. So somebody can't, you know, drive by your house, collect some data and packets, and then take it somewhere else and try to break the key. But obviously, if it's a shorter passphrase, it is easier to guess it if somebody's kind of using tools to do that. So the kind of blanket statement is, if you do a longer passphrase, whether it's WPA 2 or 3, you're going to be in better shape. It doesn't have to be complex. You know, it can be, like I said, just a phrase, maybe a line from a book or a song or something, or a random jumble of words together. And that's going to get you in a pretty good space.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great tip about the passphrase and, you know, that even organizations like NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technologies, have been trying to help people move to passphrases over really hard to remember strings in situations like wireless, when you do have to keep entering a lot. And we're big fans of password wallets on this show, but, you know, when you're doing Wi-Fi, you usually don't have you may be able to check your password wallet, but you won't have the auto fill in. So that's a great, great point about the passphrase.
Yeah. Diana, my life would come to a screeching halt if I didn't have a password manager.
I know. Yeah, we
are just, you know, it's worth mentioning this too, because there are some other kind of standards or features, especially in home wireless, that are designed for easy onboarding. Like the WPS stuff. And then in the new iteration, we have something called, I think it's a Wi-Fi certified Easy Connect. And so these are mechanisms that's not really widely adopted yet. But one of the things to remember about home networks and security is that anything that makes it easy for you to print directly to your printer from like your phone, easy for you to add a device on the network or connect something without going through the normal steps, every one of those things that are enabled to make it easy is going to introduce a vulnerability into the network as well.
Okay. Yeah, good to remember. So there are always trade-offs. Yeah. So some of these systems, they offer the ability to create a guest network. Is that something that, or is that a good idea, a bad idea? Why do they exist? And is this something that I need in my house?
You know, oh my God, that's a hard one. It's another kind of, it depends. So, you know, in an enterprise setting, you know, we're always, when we get into security and network architecture, we are always going to segment the crap out of everything as much as we possibly can. And that is our kind of fallback for some security when we don't have it, you know, up the stack. When we're at home, it really just depends on what's on the network and what we're worried about. So I'm still a huge fan, just coming from the enterprise side, of, you know, kind of keeping some separate networks for different things. You know, for example, maybe, you know, your leisure and entertainment devices and things your kids are using versus, you know, home automation system or the devices, you know, the adults are using for work purposes. That I wouldn't list that as a have to have, because I think, you know, the one thing, just like with anything that we're talking about with security, it has to be a system that you find to be manageable and a process that you will repeat. Because the minute you kind of break the barrier there, you've invalidated all of that work to set it up. So, you know, I would say don't set up a bunch of stuff if you're not going to have, you know, kind of the discipline in the household to segment those things properly and use it. And that goes in enterprise too. I mean, my gosh, how many times you guys have probably seen this, you know, there's a pre-shared key network that's designed for, you know, biomedical devices, and somebody comes into the hospital and they can't get on the guest for some reason, or they need some other access to something, and somebody gives them that passphrase to get on. So these things aren't really limited. The challenges aren't really limited to the home. These are things that we're doing at work too. So back to the question of creating a guest network. I'm a fan of that. Part of it depends on the type of system you have, because again, if you're using one of those platforms that's the little all-in-one wireless router thingy that your internet provider gave you, you might not have a lot of options around that. If you did buy a different kit and overlay it, you can probably pretty easily spin up a guest network. So if you're going to have other people over at your house, or, you know, you have kids that are just you know, Lord knows what they're doing. I think it's kind of nice to separate the things that you care about from the things that you don't.
And would it be okay to put an easier password on that guest network? Or is this like kind of, you know, creating some kind of a loop, like a gap in the security of the entire setup?
You know, it really depends. So I know I keep saying it depends. So on the back end, you know, kind of the couple questions are, if somebody is getting onto whatever that network is, let's just call it the guest network, and it has a shorter passphrase. Once they're on that guest network, you know, my assumption would be they don't have access to anything else in your house, including other things on the guest network. So, you know, they can't get to your printers. They can't get to your home automation stuff. They can't get to anything else. If that's true, you know, the risk of having a short passphrase and other people getting access to that somehow is pretty low. We're not really worried about it too much. Now, you know, maybe you're worried about it for other reasons. Maybe your neighbor is, you know, mooching off of your internet and taking up your bandwidth because they're streaming Netflix all day. You know, so there's stuff like that. So it really just depends on like, what are we worried about? What are we protecting? And is that segmented? You know, if it is, little risk.
Got it. And what about all those smart devices that everybody has at home now? We have gaming consoles. We have sometimes our fridges and TVs connected to stuff. God knows there's a ton of stuff. Is it okay to have those on the same network that I use for work, for example?
This is another tough one. And this is so obviously on the enterprise side, with the pandemic and this kind of sudden work from home, this is something we're working through from that employer side with that using for work piece about what are people doing when they go home? And how do we, you know, secure it? How do we monitor it, not monitor their personal stuff, but get some visibility into what they're doing, you know, with work. So there's a few options here. It is another, it depends. And it depends on kind of what type of work. I'm coming from an environment where one of my primary customers and is a CMMC, you know, DFARS compliant environment. It's very strict with connectivity and access and even, you know, the different peripherals and stuff, whether it's a mouse that's needed or a headset or a microphone has to go through full supply chain stuff. So if you're in an environment that's, you know, highly regulated, has, you know, some special security considerations, I think that's a great conversation to have with your, you know, your employer, and ask what they're recommending you do. Barring that, if it's just, you know, let's say, you know, the rest of us that just work in the world and we're not in something highly regulated where our employer is giving us instructions, it kind of goes back to that, you know, Jen's personal gut feeling of liking to segment the things that we care about versus the things that we don't. You know, we've definitely seen a few examples over the years. Diane, I think you and I have talked about this at some point before with the aquarium in the casino, you know, where somebody was able to, you know, to get in that way to the network because it wasn't segmented properly. The truth is, you know, it depends on who you are. There's definitely different advice I would give to somebody that was, you know, a public figure, a celebrity, politician versus just your standard home user. Most people are going to use the same network or same networks attached to the same connection for all of the things they do in the house. And for right now, I think that's, I don't want to say it's okay. I'm going to say it's accepted. It's just how we're living our life right now. I think ultimately we're going to get to the point where we are going to see more things that are connected. We are going to see more vulnerabilities that are moving laterally in home networks. And that advice might change.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And I kind of hope that more companies will start to provide guidance to the home user on here are ways to set up your network so that people don't, because, you know, most people look at this stuff and it's really confusing. So I think the more guidance that companies can give, even not just government and DFARS contractors, but just more guidance to just all of us, the average user, I think it'll be helpful for the security of Wi-Fi overall.
Would but, be. And I'll yeah. say this too, you know, because again, if, you know, somebody is using whatever, you know, I don't know, Spectrum or AT&T or Google Fiber, whatever they gave you, each of those things are different ages. They have different capabilities. The menu systems are different. And so it's almost getting into like, we're in this new weird world of a different type of BYOD, where the home network might be something that the organizations, if people are going to be working from home, maybe what happens is, you know, if it's not a remote AP from the enterprise. And so, you know, for home users, there are options from the enterprise where they can ship out a little tiny, it's basically an access point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they look like little boxes. Sometimes they actually look like an access point. And it connects back into the enterprise, and you can broadcast the same secure networks from the enterprise into the home. Obviously, that's only designed for those work devices, not for your, you know, refrigerators or gaming consoles. So we do have that option coming from the enterprise. But I think the other option is, you know, okay, we're giving you laptops to use. We're giving you, you know, cell phones to use. You know, frankly, that $150 to $600 for an entire home network would not be a big expense for an enterprise to take on per user to add that security. They spend a lot more money on other stuff. So, you know, Dinah, maybe that's the direction we're going, where it's like, you're going to get a secure home network in a box.
Yeah. Yeah. But for those employees or for anybody, right. Let's say maybe I have my own company. I have a shop on Etsy. You know, somebody who wants to take that next step and not just use what the internet provider gave me. I want to do a little bit more at my house. You know, I want to maybe be able to do some of these segments with guest networks. Maybe I want to get the ability to monitor if my neighbor is hanging off of my Wi-Fi. So what are your recommendations for the best at-home, easy-to-use systems? What should consumers be looking for?
All right. Well, I'm not a consumer brand specialist. I'm not going to make specific recommendations about brands or products, sure. But what I can do is give you guys kind of a list of things to look for.
Yeah.
You know, so pick the brand or, you know, feature set you're interested in. The first thing I'll say is that I think you mentioned, Dinah, like you've got a gamer in your house. From a bandwidth perspective, most of the, I'm going to say like 99.999 some percent of the bandwidth reviews from the different, you know, places that do different reviews and comparisons, that's all just bunk. Like that's ignore that. It's just, there are too many other things that impact speed and bandwidth that can't be compensated for in the type of tests that they're doing. There's probably only a handful of people in the world that I would trust outside of the manufacturers to do that testing. So if you're reading, you know, PC magazine reviews or something else, completely ignore the bandwidth. That really doesn't play into what we're talking about. It's not going to translate into your house. Aside from that, you definitely want to look for the latest standards. So that's, you know, the wireless RF standard as well as the security standard. Right now we're at Wi-Fi 6, which is 802.11.8x. That's Wi-Fi 6. If you see AC, that's a prior generation that's Wi-Fi 5. So if you're going to spend money, get the latest stuff. There is also 6E. E is an Echo. That is Wi-Fi 6 generation over a 6 gigahertz band. That's brand new. The FCC just opened up the airspace in the US recently. That's great. We'll talk, maybe I'll come back to that when we talk about bandwidth in a second. But it is one of those things that the rest of like your clients have to support that. So that is something you can look at, but at least Wi-Fi 6. Wi-Fi 6, you're good. 6E is awesome. If you see that, I wouldn't pay a bunch of extra money for it right now. If you're doing something with more than one AP and you're looking at mesh, you want to make sure you get something that has a dedicated backhaul. And the backhaul is just for that AP that's, I'm going to air quote, remote. So, you know, one of the APs is going to be where your internet connection is. The next AP is going to be somewhere else. So let's say you need the second floor of your house where the first one doesn't reach or something like that. you do want to make sure that the way those two things are communicating over the air, it is its own backhaul, because if it's not, you're going to lose half of the bandwidth in that hop. So dedicated backhaul if you're doing mesh. The next thing, I kind of maybe touch on this a little bit, but you know, make sure that your clients support, clients meaning your endpoints, whatever you're connecting to the wireless, that those things support whatever the AP features are that you want to take advantage of now. That doesn't mean, you know, so let's say you have a Wi-Fi 5, 11AC laptop. That doesn't mean you need to get Wi-Fi 5 access points. Go ahead and get Wi-Fi 6. But just know that, you know, there's going to be a list of features on that AP that you're not going to get the full advantage of until your laptop supports that as well. So buy the latest AP stuff, and then, you know, you can upgrade your endpoints as that works for you. A lot of those overlay systems, so I think you guys kind of asked about some of the security stuff. A lot of those add-on kits you can get do have sort of, I don't want to call it proprietary, but they've added their own security features into the wireless system. Things like, you know, malware protection, child, you know, what do you call those? The content controls, you know, controlling what children can get to, you know, based on rating, just like, you know, R rating movies and stuff.
Yeah,
like
parental that. Control. Yeah.
Parental right. controls. Thank you. See, I don't have kids. So these words just, you know, whatever. Child control. Parental controls. Yes. Awesome. So, you know, all of the systems, you know, that you're going to buy will probably have a subset of these features, maybe a guest network. So, you know, pick and choose what you want out of that. You might not need those things. You might want one or two. They're not all equal. So, you know, find the one that has the stuff you want. And then, you know, I'm pretty, again, because of the type of industry, you know, Diana and Limmer that we work in, you know, I'm very cautious about, supply chain and where my products come from, even in the home. So, you know, definitely if you're concerned about that, you know, do look and see where that brand is living in the world, what geography is it within the US? Is it somewhere else? How do you feel about that? And then I think the last thing I would say is that, not exactly security related, but a lot of users will kind of look at maybe we're not doing mesh. And so when we do mesh, the connection between the APs is over the air. There's also ways to do it not over the air. And specifically in a home, if you don't have network cables run, that tends to happen over the power, like the power line in the house.
Right.
Yeah. So those power line adapter things are pretty neat. I've used several over the years. I have one right now. I will tell you they are very inconsistent. Even the one I have now, which I upgraded from the last one I have to reboot it pretty constantly. It tends to get weird and lose packets. It can be pretty quirky, regardless of the house it's in. So that is one thing I kind of caution people about is, you know, those power line adapters, if you're looking for a resilient, you know, high quality connection, that's probably not going to be it. And this is one of those cases where over the air with mesh is going to give you a better experience. So those are really the things to look for.
This is super interesting. I think that you definitely gave us a ton of stuff our listeners can take away from this and you know, change the way that their network is. And one more thing that made sense here is, you know, depending on their risk level, like you're saying, if someone is a celebrity, if they have other things they want to protect and not just an average home, they do have to think about better protection. So thank you so much, JJ, for taking the time to help us understand and build better and safer home Wi-Fi networks. And thank you, our listeners, for being with us today. I hope this episode was as helpful to you as can be and will help you check your Wi-Fi setup and maybe even go and make some tweaks. Please follow the podcast and get involved. You can reach out to us on Twitter at @cyber_everyday. Or on LinkedIn if you want to send us some questions in advance or suggest some topics for upcoming episodes. You can also email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com.
our podcast page has more details for you and resources for each and every episode, including what we talked about today. So thank you everyone for tuning in, and stay safe out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.